In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to another Knife Talk podcast. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We're happy to keep you company on your commute, in the shop, while whatever you're doing, while you're cooking, wherever you're at. We're here to keep you company, help troubleshoot whatever you got going on in the shop, talk about knives, give each other a hard time in general, and just try to have a good time and kind of take our mind off of some of the difficulties in life and talk about knives.
I got a great idea before we start. Let's not do hard times today. I've had it. We keep going, but
yeah,
I'll tell you all about it.
Okay, we won't get into hard times. I'm here with Jeff Fader of Fader Knives. Or you want me to start over?
No.
No, okay. We're with Fader. This is going to be a great intro. Here with Fader Knives, Jeff Fader of Fader Knives. I am Marco Malmasi, and soon to be joining us will be El Capitan of Chop Knives, Mr. Craig Lockwood. And we're going to start off usually with just kind of catching up on the last week. I feel like this last week's been a really long week for me for some reason. Time is a weird thing. You ever notice that? Sometimes it feels like it flies by, and sometimes it feels like it drags on forever.
I used to, when I was at a metal shop, and I hated it. I hated every second of it.
Okay.
And what I used to do is I found out, this is a while, this is like, geez, like 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out that when I was on a job site that I hated, if I drank a Monster energy drink, for some reason I started calling it the time machine, because it would just rip me through time and space.
Yeah.
And then I wouldn't call them Monster, I'd call them time machines. So I was
right.
You know, I definitely know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I used to struggle with, when I had like regular day jobs, it felt like they would drag on forever. And I realized that if I just keep myself busy no matter what, that day will fly by super fast. And so, but with that idea in mind, then I was like, okay, on my weekends, I'm going to slow down. But what's funny, on my personal time, if I was super kind of like laid back and chilled out over the weekend would fly by. So what I started doing was keeping my ass busy during the work week, and then on the weekend I'd do the exact same thing, but the time felt very different. So my weekends would feel like a week, and my work week would feel like a weekend.
Manipulating time and space.
Yeah, because I would just on the weekend I'd be like, I'm gonna have a lazy morning, maybe I'll go to the grocery store, do some laundry, and just kind of relax. And then But then my weekend would just disappear.
Yeah.
And I fucking hated it.
Yeah.
Because then all of a sudden it was back to work again. So I was like, I did a little experiment, and I was like, let's flip it on ahead, and let's keep ourselves busy the whole weekend long. And it was amazing. I still do it now.
I don't get a chance to relax ever. So I keep myself busy 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm burning the candle at both ends.
Yeah. Well, how's your week been?
Well, when I talked about getting my, you know, hard times, this is Thursday, and last night was the NBA playoffs, and the Knicks made it to the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time in like 25 years or something like that, 20 years. And they lost a heartbreaker last night.
Oh.
They lost a heartbreaker against the Pacers. And that little son of a bitch, Tyrese Halliburton from the Pacers, did the Reggie Miller choke sign That's what traditional of Reggie Miller back in the day gave Spike Lee. He gave him the choke after they kind of came back and beat the Knicks. And goddamn Tyrese Halliburton did the same thing. It was an amazing game, but it was like the worst heartbreaker. I was listening to sports radio all day, and everybody is like calling in with these thick Long Island accents, like depressed as hell. So I was like, and then all of a sudden, what does
a Long Island accent sound like compared to?
I was driving on the LIE, and this guy in front of me is traditional and typical, and then or guys from New Jersey. He's like, I was coming into the fucking city, and this guy was giving me problems. Next thing you know, I'm tired because I've been up all night listening to this goddamn game, and the fucking Tyrese Halliburton put the choke sign on the Knicks, and now and it's raining, and I got to pay my fucking rent. You know, it's kind of like guys like that. So yeah, everyone's fucking miserable. And it was a terrible, terrible loss. And then, of course, I get Mr. Nick, in the knife making world, there are no Knicks fans. So yeah. I'm like target numero uno of ball breaking in my DM. So,
oh
yeah. So it was a tough loss, and then made it worse. So, but other than that, everything's good.
Okay. Things are going good in the shop.
Yeah. My daughter came back.
No more snakes on a plane.
Pardon me?
No more snakes snakes in the ventilation system.
snakes in the he's here. He's in there somewhere.
Oh, really?
He's up in there. We tried finding him after the last episode. My man, actually I left early because my man John Ledford was here waiting for me, and he tried to get up in the ceiling, and we're looking around, and he's up in there, and he's chilling too because it got real cold. And then we think that he's just chilling in the rafters.
I got you.
I will say this. The amount of here's the funny thing. I'll tell you the funny thing. And this is something that you probably go through, and I go through. Mostly people who are content creators go through is like the Monday morning quarterbacks.
Oh sure.
You know what you should do or what you shouldn't do, or you got it wrong. And the funny thing is they usually will say something, but without any regard to the fact that time has passed. So, they tell you what you should do when it has already happened, right?
Yeah.
So we get a lot of – and the funny part is most of these guys are content creators too, who hate it when people act like, I've been welding for 25 years and that looks like – you know, so I'm getting all these fucking snakeheads, giving me all these like, that's a rat snake. You got rats in your shop. Like, I don't have rats in my shop. Oh, well, yeah, I've been removing rat. I've been moving snakes out of houses for 30 years. All right, don't give me a resume. You know, I certainly don't care. So it was a lot of that. And then what else? My kids was home for a week, and she's going to be hanging out with me for two more days, and then she's going back to – she's got an internship for the summer for her major, so she will not be around for the summer, which sucks. Oh. And then, we're working hard. We got some good stuff going on, working on some new projects, working on some old projects, having to make, business decisions that we're not thrilled about, but that's the way it is. And, a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Okay.
How are you?
I got you. I'm good. This last weekend I was actually down in Portland. The crew down at Acre Forge, spearheaded by Jeremy Spake, our friend Jeremy Spake, Spake Blades, Road to Victory. Remember that?
I do.
Road to Victory.
He and I talk,
Yeah.
It was Jeremy Spake, Road to Victory, as he was on the verge of trying to get the his journeyman Smith from the ABS, and I referred to it as Jeremy Spake, Road to Victory.
Yeah. So spearheaded by Jeremy. Jeremy and I have been good buddies for a long time. And he's started working with the crew down there at Acre Forge. These are kind of like a lot of former Murray Carter employees. And so it was really great to spend time with those guys and get to know them a little better. I've gotten to know them over the years while going down to like the Eugene Knife Show and seeing them at Blade Show. And they got some great machines, and they wanted me at Eugene I was talking about forging Damascus steel, just like we were talking last week actually, and and they're curious about my process. And I was like, why don't I just come down? So I came down and I hung out with them. We had just kind of like a mini hammer-in at their shop for like a day and a half. And they had a great guy named Teo down doing photos and kind of documenting everything. And I just kind of walked them through my process, forged a few blades, one damasteel blade, a couple carbon steel blades, actually used just like a 1-inch chunk of like the I think it was like the 1 1/8 or 1 1/4 hex bar that I got from our friend Lawrence Lake over at Maritime Knife Supply. And man, moving that stuff after forging some damasteel is like squishing on a piece of fucking cream cheese or something like that. Yeah. Dude, it's so soft compared to the damasteel. But I got a great blade forged out of the damasteel, and and it was a good time. And it was good to get to know those guys better, or that crew better, and just have some laughs and eat some good food and spend some time with my buddy Jeremy. He was very kind and hosted me at his place, and yeah, it was a good time.
How far away is that from you?
Portland, their shop from my shop is basically a 2-hour drive.
Oh, okay, it's not that bad.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. Yeah, easy drive down, easy drive back. And then otherwise, just in the shop, I'm just working on a couple of projects, trying to get them dialed in and finished out before headed down the blade. I'm going to actually be getting into the blade Thursday morning, because Thursday afternoon, I'm teaching a class. I actually am teaching a few classes, and I think you can go sign up for those, because Blade Atlanta is only a couple weeks out. Actually, as this airs, it's only going to be like maybe week and a half out or so. And so, if you are interested in taking any of the classes, you better go sign up soon, because I think there are some limitations on space in some of these classes. But on the first day, on Thursday, it's going to be kind of catered towards makers so that they don't have to leave their table like on a Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. So there's a Thursday class geared towards forgers. So the class is called Material Conservation for the Forging Smith. So it's just like some techniques and approaches that I use for kind of estimating the amount of material I need for forging out blades, whether it's flat bar stock, whether it's large stock for integrals, Damascus, whatever. And then the second class, which is going to be Friday morning, is a deep dive into culinary knives. So this is great for makers who are interested in trying to better understand some of the nuances and the different grinds and design features of culinary knives, as well as for collectors who are wanting to deepen their understanding of culinary knives. Because I think, you know, like Bowies and Hunters and art knives and daggers and stuff like that, like people have been making these kind of art knives and fancy knives for a long time, and culinary knives, even though makers have been making them for 20 in a handmade kind of custom made way over the last freaking almost 30 years now, it's still just like a very new thing that a lot of the higher end collectors don't really get. And I think they do want to get it, but nobody's really out there kind of taking the time to educate them. So I want to do this class to kind of help them better understand as well what they're looking for when they look at custom made chef's knife. Because if you don't have any knowledge and you're looking at two side by side, one could be dramatically better than the other. But unless you have that knowledge, you have no fucking idea. And then the last class I'm going to be teaching Saturday morning is Demystifying Damascus. So again, this is kind of for makers who are just getting into Damascus, or honestly, if they have experience in making Damascus and they want to kind of have better concepts of the Damascus design and composition, as well as for collectors, again, to help them better understand what they're looking at when they're looking at Damascus. Because, like, unfortunately, I think, again, there's a lack of education in regard to Damascus and how much work goes into making some Damascus. Because there are some patterns, like a random pattern, a ladder pattern, even a Turkish twist. These are all patterns that you can forge in one day and also forge and heat treat a blade all in one day, versus a mosaic Damascus pattern that takes 2, 3, sometimes 4 days to put and assemble and put the steel together, assemble it, and weld it properly and securely, so that then you can then cut a chunk of it off or tile out a blade and then forge a blade out before heat treating and so on. And they, like, people will put potentially random pattern or these Turkish twist patterns, these kind of simpler patterns, beside side by side with a mosaic, and be like, yeah, they're the same thing, right? And they really are not. So it's trying to help those collectors kind of get gain a better appreciation and grasp and conceptually as to the skill, level of skill and talent, and I guess care that it takes to make these kind of patterns so that they reflect that they better understand the value that's reflected in the price point of some of these pieces that have some of these really unique mosaic Damascus patterns in them.
So if somebody is going down to Atlanta for Blade Show and they want to attend these classes, where do they sign up?
So if you go to Blade Show's website, you go to bladeshow.com, or even Google Blade University. The first thing that comes up, their SEO is on point. So their SEO has the Blade University classes come up first thing.
What's SEO?
Search engine optimization.
Okay. So when you plug it in, it comes up.
Yes. Okay. So it comes up and then you can, and then it shows the different classes and then you can buy tickets all on that same page for the various classes, I believe. And then, yeah. And do your thing all there. Go to bladeshow.com. Blade U classes and you should be able to get all signed up and everything. Yeah.
How long are you going to be down there for?
I'm actually going to stay through. So I'm getting there morning, and I'll be at the show through Sunday afternoon. And then I'm going to be working with my friend Lucas O'Hara over at Grizzly Forge. We got some fun work and projects we got lined up since I'm going to be down there already anyhow. And so I'm going to be hanging out with him and doing a little bit of work, doing some Damascus work. And I look forward to sharing that project somewhere down the road because it's kind of a special thing. And yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, so I'll be there
I hope I'll see you.
Ooh. Oh, really?
Yeah, I'll be there on Saturday.
Okay. Oh, shit.
Just Saturday.
Yeah.
That's how I do.
And we got a thing at Damasteel, right? I think at like 1 o'clock on Saturday.
So. I guess. I don't know.
And then you're going to be cruising with the Tormek dudes?
I'm going to be down there.
You're just hanging out with the Swedes the whole time.
No. I'm going to God bless Lawrence Lake. Lawrence Lake is my guy, so I'm going to hang out with him. And
nice.
I'll definitely see the Damasteel guys. I'll see the Tormek guys. When we do a couple ad reads while we're here, I'm going to definitely go see my guys over at Evenheat. Evenheat are the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. And if you go to evenheat-chill.com, you can see what the fuss is about. And if you're at Blade Show, by far, you should go visit those guys over at Even Heat. And they're terrific. It's a wonderful family, and we've been friends with them for quite a long time. And it ain't get much better than those guys. So definitely go check out Quinn and Spence. And hopefully, I don't know if his dad goes in. I don't think the dad goes anymore. I think that he's had it. He's smart. Yeah. But he's smart. That whole family's fantastic. So definitely
awesome.
Go check them out. And then check out your Even Heat Kiln at evenheat-kiln.com. So that sounds like fun. So what are you looking at? Well, why don't we do a little, before Craig gets here and we can do questions, we can talk about what you're looking forward to the most at Blade Show.
Yeah. No, I'm really looking forward to, I'm looking forward to the classes. It'll be exciting because it's something I've been doing. Traveling around the country and teaching private lessons and small class situation. So these will be larger classes. Obviously, they're very abbreviated. And I think for Blade University, some of the classes are only like half an hour long. So I have an hour and a half slated for each of these classes. And hopefully it's enough time because I have a tendency to be long-winded, if you haven't noticed already in me describing these classes. But I think it's going to be really good. And so there's that. Of course, seeing all the homies, I look forward to seeing you again. Our people from all the different our sponsors, especially the Even Heat guys, and you know, our Brogbeck guys, and Lawrence and Damasteel, and all the guys. I think Texas Ferrier Supply should be there too.
Yep.
I think I saw Evan last year just for a second. Unfortunately, I want to catch him, get a little bit more time chatting with him. Yeah, I don't know, but just like seeing all the people and doing the thing, and it's a lot. It can be a lot of talking and a lot of drinking, but it's not forever. And so I was a good boy last year. I didn't get too housed.
One year
I was going to bed late, and it was
one year you were really bad one morning. So back in the day when we
this was
when
fucking first, Aussies, bro.
Yeah. Blame them all. I'm not really doing any drinking.
And Henning
anymore.
Wilkinson.
I'm like heavy in the. I'm like my training is finally starting to get like I'm starting to feel really good.
Right.
And I'm recovering much faster, which is shocking. I was having like a good 3 weeks where I was not recovering well from running. So like I am like cutting. I'm going to ride the wave, and I'm feeling so much better that I'm like. None of this, none of that. No. So I don't think I'm going to be – I don't do it. But I'll tell you one time. 1 year I went down and I took Tony down with me. Mm-hmm. And we did a collaboration with the chef. And he and I wanted to celebrate because it was like a good deal. And he and I got bombed. And it was a big that was a big mistake. And he and I the next morning it was a rough situation. But then one time I went and I was having breakfast with Jeremy Spake and Will Stelter, and then you came down and you grunted at us. You grunted at us and then you put your hand out, this could be an exaggeration, but I think it's close. You put your hand out to Jeremy, said, "Give me the keys to your room."
And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, that's exactly. All right, good. So you stick your give me your keys to your room. You mugged him for his keys, and then went right back upstairs because you were like, "I'm not a morning person," and that was about it.
That's probably because I went to sleep at like fucking 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning.
I don't fuck with that shit. I can't do it. And it's like the days of being hungover, I'm 51. It gets harder and harder. It takes longer and longer to recover, and I refuse to do it. So I'm like, I'll be drinking seltzer water. That's about it. And
I was gonna say, but that's well. And for anybody else out there who's like, I do want to still hang out and socialize, but don't necessarily need to be slamming drinks all the time. Like a soda water with lime. Have you ever?
Yeah,
with a little bit of bitters in it.
These motherfuckers aren't gonna. You're not gonna be going out to Atlanta and go to. You're gonna be standing in line with all.
I'm
these
gonna
dudes
be drinking those.
Yeah, I know. You're gonna be standing in line with all these guys wearing black shirts, beards down their fucking assholes. Excuse me, a bartender. Can I have a seltzer water with lime and some bitters in it? Fuck you. They're gonna kick you out.
Well, and hopefully they'll have some. It's shocking. The NA options are pretty fucking solid in the last couple of years.
Oh, fuck that. NA, ND, and me. I'm out. I'm not even sticking
around
for
the Guinness NA is really good. Stella does a really good NA.
Yeah, I'm not sticking around for any of it. I'm NA, NO. I'm fucking getting
NO to the NA.
NO to all of it. I'm just going to go down there and have a good time. I'm hoping not to get yelled at by Will Stelter's mother.
Why?
She has this way. Will Stelter's mother is fantastic, and I have nothing terrible to say about Will. Will is my guy. We made jokes about him a couple of weeks ago, saying that he looked like when he's smoking a cigar, he looks like a little night. He looks like one of them child. He's like the poster child for like. Don't let children work in mines, And I walked past him, and I said, mother. I said something. And I did not know that his mom, who used to listen to this podcast, heard me refer to him in some kind of horrible way.
Oh, boy.
And she said, I recognized that voice, and she tore me up. So hopefully. And I think I said to her respectfully, I'm like, I'm a grown man. I'm not a child to be scolded, madam. Your kid's got a cigar in his mouth. I don't defend him. Don't scold me. I'm all in with Mrs. Stelter. Hopefully she'll yell at me again. And if she does, I deserved it. I'm looking forward to seeing everybody, and I'm definitely going to go see my man Rob Wildswood, and pick up some wood.
Some wild ass wood.
I gotta use my head this year. I gotta go down to the guys I gotta see first. I usually meander towards him towards the end because he's usually in the smaller room, and then all the good stuff's gone.
But you know what the movie is? Thursday.
Go right to him.
No, Thursday during setup, a lot of the suppliers are set up.
They ain't going down on Thursday.
That's fine.
I'm not doing that. I am going. I'm going to arrive at the airport on Saturday morning, Uber to the event, do my thing, and then
the
go
shirt
right
on your back
in
the backpack.
And go right back to the airport. I'm not, there's no, I can't do it. I can't do it. So.
There's a lot.
But I mean, that's the, I tell you what, the best part about the G10, using G10 Matan material, is the fact that it is what it is. You know, you never have a problem with, you don't have to look at it. Royal blue is royal blue. Toxic green is toxic green. Hunter orange is Hunter orange. Mm-hmm. But with wood, especially wood scales, it sucks to order them online. And when it shows up, it's not what you wanted. Mm. I will say that that is like the biggest disappointment.
I've definitely had that happen.
Be able to go to Blade Show, and then there's all these purveyors of really nice wood that you can pick up and look at. That's worth price of admission.
Yeah.
Because you can pick and choose, and then you can actually look at stuff.
You put your hands on the wood.
You can, that's right. But you can't do it online. That's the hardest part about buying stuff online, is it's just, it's not going to be exactly the way you want it. All right. Well, with that said, maybe we should hit. I don't know where our man is. He's on his way, I guess. So maybe we should hit some questions. What do you think?
Let's do it.
You think we should hit some questions?
Yeah.
All right. So before we hit some questions, guys, I want to thank our friends at Endasa USA. They are makers of RhinoWet. I use RhinoWet. Mareka uses RhinoWet. Craig uses RhinoWet. Oh, somebody's here.
Hola.
RhinoWet is the best stuff on the market, made by Adasa USA, and you can only get it. Well, that's not true. You should get it at Texas Ferrier Supply. Go to TexasFerrierSupply.com and put in the promo code KNIFETALK10. You get 10% off all your RhinoWet, all your Ferrier stuff, your blacksmith stuff, all that stuff. And we're big fans of Texas Ferrier Supply. Love Adasa USA. Don't fall for the banana tailpipe and get that fake stuff they have going on over in Australia. Go to Texas Ferrier Supply, and you'll make sure you will not get any of the fake stuff at TexasFerrierSupply.com. Use promo code KNIFETALK10. And without any further ado, the lead monster of the of the 355s, the greatest of all time, Craig Lockwood. How are you,
monster.
Craig?
I'm good. Sorry. I've been in a mad rush to get back here. So, I've been skidding through the streets, and I'm back. Ooh. Yes.
I'm glad you made
feel?
It safely.
I'm good. Yeah, I'm really good. Thank you. Really good.
What have I missed? We were just talking about Blade Show in a couple weeks.
Right.
We were about to hit some questions, and but with that said, how have you been?
I'm very good. I had a call asking if I'd stand in for somebody in a band tomorrow, and I was just like, well, I don't know the songs. They said, well, rehearsing tonight, so that's where I've been. I've been rehearsing, and
Wow,
yeah,
that's great.
Are you excited?
Yeah, it's a tiny thing, you know. It's in a small sort of club thing, but it's good. Yeah, playing with different people it's good fun actually. Yeah, it's good.
Sweet. You're like a professional. You're a session musician.
I wouldn't quite call it that. If you saw the state on the no, not quite. But it's good fun.
You're hammering your new band already. These fucking guys.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, these fucking guys. Yeah, No, it's all good. All good.
Well, while you're here, why don't we start in with some questions?
Shall we?
What do you think?
Shall I do the first one?
Yeah.
Shall I just come in and steal all the glory?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's great. Oh, by the way, just to let you know, no snake. The snake is in the roof. We don't know where he is.
So he's still there, but...
Yeah, we think he's still there.
Oh,
it's
Jeff
been
Jr.
cold. It's been cold. Yeah, Jeff Jr. It's been... Jeff Jr. I think maybe we might call him Jeff Jr. That's a good idea. He's up in the rafters somewhere.
Oh, jeez. So when you least expect
maybe
it.
Maybe he smoked too much weed and he's putting himself in the sock drawer.
Yeah. That's me. All right. You got me down.
When you least expect it, he'll be down, crawling down your neck. Oh, jeez.
Let's hope not.
Why are you grinding? Oh, my God.
Let's hope not. That picture was it was big.
Oh, it was huge.
Think?
Yeah.
That
proper.
Was a big snake.
Proper.
Good. Some people think I'm fooling around.
No. I.
My anaconda.
I don't think I'd be in the shop knowing it was there personally now.
What's he going to? I mean, it isn't a rattlesnake. What am I going to do?
Maybe. Anyway, Paul Jansen has sent in a question to us. Gold star listener, Paul Jansen. If you've got a question, we are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. Get him through to us. And he says, any tips on getting good pictures of your work? I typically use a nice fur as a backdrop and use natural light, but my usual setup won't work for how I want to do my build-along picture. Is a DIY light box a good option, or are those a waste of time? Pictures. It's important, I think, isn't it? I mean, if we're all presenting our work,
for sure,
it, you know, you need to present them well. Yeah. I use a really, really cheap Amazon light tent kind of thing. They're like, it's like a fold-up box, and it's got lights on there and stuff. I suppose the best thing you can use is natural light, but you've got to try to avoid shadows. And if you use one of these light boxes, there'll be no shadows because they're lit in all directions. But what you do have then, you don't really have a natural sort of background. They're generally sort of white, or, you know, you could put props in, but they never look as if, you know, they never look natural. But I suppose it depends on what type of style you're going for. But those work really well. They're very, very cheap. Yeah, clean everything off nicely and you can get it looking nice. Particularly if you're doing video, what I did then, I got one of those little rotating like floors, basically. It's just like a little disc, and whatever you put on there will rotate. So if you want some sort of action and some sort of, you know, movement, that can be quite nice because, you know, it sort of hits the light and you get things sparkling. But yeah, otherwise, natural light if you can. But yeah, just avoid, you know, standing on top and blocking the sun and creating a big shadow and that kind of thing. Jeff, your game has raised over the last year massively, your pictures. Have you got any tips?
Oh, it's because I pay.
Oh, right, okay.
I'm fucking paying.
Pay the man, okay.
Are you crazy? Jesus Christ. This is the whole thing. I just want to make a joke about the fact that he uses a fur. I mean, no offense, but in my mind, I'm thinking of like some fucking triangular merkin. You know, some sort of. I will say this is our friend Mark Adams, a.k.a. Wally Llama, has a reel that he shows you how to take pictures of knives. He's an awesome photographer, and he's our friend. He listens to this podcast. And but he did a reel strictly on how to photograph a small item like a knife. And he's got a bounce, which is like just a piece of paper, you know, where you can bounce light off of, and it's not direct from, you know, if you go outside, you're going to see a lot of knives that have the blades are blue, and that's because it's reflecting the blue sky. It's not because your blade is blue. And there are different ways in which you can bounce light and stuff like that. I love natural light. I also got a better iPhone, and that's been huge. I try to do only natural light, but I can do what I can do. And I've started using bounces a little bit, but I'm not a photographer. I'm not good at it. I pay, and then I would highly suggest going to follow Mark Adams and look at his reel on how he cheaply makes really nice cheap light box, or you can make it with stuff at your house and pull it together.
Yeah. In the past, I've actually built a couple light boxes. The last one I built, I left in Connecticut. But I just use what is it? Like the foam core board that you would, like, for projects that kids would use for like trifold projects and science fairs and stuff like that. I get the white so that it's reflecting any kind of light, and then I usually put some sort of diffusion paper over the top. I do like those bounces, like Jeff is talking about. They have a couple different kinds, ones that allow light to pass through to diffuse the light, so it also kind of blocks out that blue, but it still allows the light to come through. But others only reflect light, so having options, and I think those are pretty affordable these days, especially if you're going to be doing this for a while. It's nice to have those things, but I try to use natural light as much as possible as well, just because even in my shop, like if I were to try to take a picture of a knife on the anvil, I have two different types of lights. I have an LED and a halogen, and that kind of fucks with the overall exposure. So doing stuff outside really helps. I do like using standoffs of some sort.
Yeah.
Underneath my knife, it can be as simple as just like just a couple chunks of scrap wood with either a little piece of leather on it or something like that, just to help protect the blade, especially, and the handle, but helping to raise the knife off of any surface so it gives it kind of some depth, or so it looks like it's just floating there. Anytime I see a knife resting on a rock or on concrete, I'm just like, oh god, that fucking blade. Because especially if it's Damascus, I'm like, god, that finish looks so good, and it terrifies me what might be happening on the other side of that thing sitting on a rock. But a little standoff will help make a world of difference in creating kind of some nice depth. I mean everything else you guys said sounds good. I had somebody suggest who's a photographer getting, so for like, especially for like lizards and snake terrariums, you can get these faux rocky kind of backgrounds of all different kind of shades and colors, and you can get them pretty large and pretty inexpensively. But if you want to have that aesthetic of like a rocky kind of background without it actually being rocks, you can put those down on the ground or however you have it set up, so that you can also take your photos over something like that rather than just like over the grass or a log that's outside your house that's got bird shit on it or something like that. And those are actually pretty good. And I think having a few different colors is not a bad idea, so that you can kind of play with kind of complementing or contrasting to the handle material. But that's something I have yet to do, but I that's something I'm looking at doing soon. But other than that, yeah, what you guys said sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah, light's the main thing. If you can get good sort of diffused light, yeah, you're good to go.
I got one of those Amazon fold-up tents. Yeah. Sucks.
Really? I've got a couple. I like them. Yeah, they seem to work well.
Mine looks like, it looks weird. You know who, who takes great pictures? Cliff and John take great pictures of hammers. And also the Center for Metal Arts takes great pictures of hammers, and they're using white backgrounds, and I don't know, I guess they have created like little white light boxes too.
Yeah.
And it is amazing how that has accentuated the hammers that they make.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Nice.
Look at you, photographer.
Yeah. Who's taking the next one?
All right. This one's from Rainy Day 4. She says, question, how do you break the edge or sand the steel that meets the handle at the ricasso, heel of the knife? So rounding off, I guess, sharp corners, either around the spine or at the choil?
Is that what it sounds like he's talking about? So he sent us a picture. Sending pictures doesn't really help the explanation, no offense, Rainy. But he basically had a full tang knife. It was like an outdoor knife. So when the handle finished, there was like a little knuckle guard that came out. So he's thinking about the connection between the knuckle guard. It's sharp the knuckle guard is sharp on the corners, and he's wondering how you clean that off after the handle's already on.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I just use like a J-Flex. And if you don't always have to have the tension like on the belt pulled as tight as possible. You can slack that up a little bit. With a little bit of slack or a little less tension on that J-Flex, you can really get in there and contour things really nicely and flow it around any kind of curves. And if it is basically like a straight line, then maybe you do want to go a little bit tighter. I usually start by breaking it at about a 45 and then just kind of roll it around in there though. What do you guys do?
I would suggest in this situation, I would put the handle on, but not put epoxy on it, and then I'd take a mark on where my handle is going to end. Then I would try to do that J-Flex move without the handle on.
I got you. Yeah.
Because that's the hard part. It's like there's a lot of little things that are tricky to do. Like if you were doing a full tang knife and you were worried about you were trying to clean the bolster. It's thinking about like, well, how do I clean the bolster without hitting the ricasso? And, it's the idea is trying to do things before ahead of time. In that situation, if I was worried that I was going to, make a mess of the handle, I would make a mark of where it ends, and then I would try to rough it in as much as possible before I glued the handle on.
Yeah, that's it, I think.
Sounds good.
We got a last minute one came in from Luke Knives. Luke Knives says, I have a few years before I reach this point, but I would like to hear from each of you important advice for a hobbyist maker looking to transition to full time. We get this one every so often. I think it's nice that we revisit, guys. So, hobbyist maker, when do you transition to full time?
Oh, yeah, we have variations of this a lot, don't we? I'd say try and keep the joy in it as much as you can, because once you go from a hobbyist, which is something that you want to do in your spare time, to something that is then your job, which is responsible for putting food on the table and for paying your bills, things are very, very different. So if you're a hobbyist, make sure you're getting some orders in beforehand, so you're not starting from cold, because the worst thing you can do is just say, okay, this is what I am now. This is all I do. I'm a full-time maker. And if you've got no orders in the books, you're just starting with stress immediately. So, you know, don't make a cutoff point saying, right, I'm now a full-time maker. I mean, just it can be gradual, you know? Just get some orders in, and when you find that the orders are making more money than any other sort of hustle you've got going on or job you've got going on, then maybe you think, well, it makes financial sense now to do more of this. But I wouldn't necessarily put a line in the sand and say, from that point on, I'm going to become a full-time maker.
Yeah, I really like that, because it creates kind of a sense of job security in a way. That when you have some orders banked, I don't know if you necessarily want to do that forever. Some people can. I think there are ways of managing that. But I think right now, as you are working in that direction, branding yourself and marketing yourself is probably one of the other big things you can do on top of making great knives. I think a lot of people mistakenly think they can just make great work and people are going to find them, and that's just not necessarily going to happen, because otherwise you're just kind of operating in a vacuum. Like, there's such a fire hose of information and posts and knives out there that it's hard to differentiate yourself. So by taking a little bit of time to build up kind of the brand or kind of the character around yourself and your work, trying to give people more than just the work to connect to and want to, and which is giving them more of a reason to buy rather than just the price point and the aesthetic of the knife, then you're going to help kind of create more security for yourself, because people have a reason beyond just the product to buy a handmade thing. And I think in general, when people are buying handmade objects, part of what they're buying is the story along with the work, and they're connecting with that story, with that person, that maker, that really kind of that resonates with them and incentivizes them to support that person. And it's tricky, but I think honestly, even just doing simple like follow along posts, work in progress posts, help to bring people along the way. And if you're not interested in talking over the top of a reel or whatever, or in a video, just start by writing captions or do voiceovers afterward, because trying to talk and take a video at the same time is a pain in the ass. But little things like that will help to get people interested in what you're doing and following along with what you got going on.
I think that these are all great, and I think that over the years we've been talking a lot about the stuff that works for us and or doesn't work for us. I would say this. One thing is people who decide to be in the creative business or in the arts, or you're a lone business person, or you're a small business, or you're going to make that step, especially in anything that's creative, it's harder than anything else. It's harder than deciding to go to get a, you know, it's very, very hard. And the hard part is especially if you don't have business experience or understanding of how to grow, or setting an expectation and then trying to realize, all right, well, we've hit the glass ceiling of what we can do in the situation. If we want to grow, we have to make bigger decisions. I think that there are business things that we're not thinking about. And I think that when you said security, I think that that's a really great, because I don't think that people look at business growth and business flexibility in terms of security. And I think that's a misunderstanding. I think that's something that we're really missing out on. It's being flexible, but also having a real business behind you, not money in a garbage bag in the under the bed shit. And I think that. I feel really strongly that it's important to follow your dreams and to do these things, but I think that waiting and being 100% sure is more important, especially when it comes to the point where you're like, if you're asking a podcast when you should grow, be starting our business, you're not ready. You know, it's like you have to be compelled, and you have to be, there's a million more things that we don't cover on this podcast that will help you be more successful.
Yeah.
Well, and another thing that I know that you do really well, Jeff, is you keep yourself organized. You have lists. You have a plan for when you go into the shop. And I think that's something that a lot of makers, myself included, could do a better job of, is following that example, because it's very easy to get into the shop and just be like, well, what am I doing today? And you can kind of drag your ass around until you figure it out. Or you could just spend a little bit of time either at the end of the previous day or first thing in the morning to make a list of stuff that you got to do and then fucking get after it.
But they're part that, well, thank you. But and I feel very good about the where we're at now. I mean, right now we don't have manufacturing, or we don't have a fulfillment problem. Now we have a sales problem. We're not. I want to be the point where we can't work any harder and we have to build. We're not at that point yet. So there's other parts of it too. That you can be as organized as you want, but if there are outer forces that are not, you know, in your, you know, that are against you, or when I say against you, I mean like there are things that are, you know, you have no control over. You have to figure out ways in which to deal with these things. Part of it being in business is being able to be flexible and dealing with things in a positive way. We just have invested in a lot of different things, and it's some things have been great and some things have been bad. Another thing that one of the big things that I think that knife makers who send messages through this podcast or listen to this podcast, they're looking for safe answers and financially safe answers. Like I just did I put up a reel on how I make my serrations again. I don't know, I must be out of my fucking mind, but whatever. And I get messages from people saying, how do you do this? What sizing do you do? I'm getting all these messages wanting exact answers because they're too afraid of the financial failures of making a mistake. And this is a crucially stupid problem. And you have to be able to make, you know, calculated investments in terms of where you want to go. And if they don't work, you have to be able to be flexible enough and strong enough to say, this isn't working, I'm going to try a different tact.
Right.
And the problem is I think that everyone is looking for security, but they're not willing to understand what it takes to be successful. And some of that is experience, advice from other business people, looking outside of the knife community for how businesses grow, and understanding that things aren't fair. And no one's hard work does not entitle you to success.
Yeah. So, hard work or quality work. I have a friend who makes fucking phenomenal knives, and he's fucking struggling so hard.
Well,
and but he doesn't do any kind of posting that really kind of like develops or that creates, I think, a connection with the things that he's making. And I'm like, dude, you can't think that somehow people are going to randomly discover you. That might happen every once in a while, but you got to do some work on your own to make that kind of happen for you rather than just randomly happening.
But posting in Instagram and social media is just a tiny part of what of what networking is.
Yeah.
And it's just a visual thing that we have on our phone that it's very easy to do. But there are other things in order to do business. Like I know all these guys like our man Knives by Nuge and JD Custom Knives, all these guys made the investment to go to Blade Show. You know, it's these systematic steps to grow and to take, you know, the kind of decisions that you don't sleep easy at night. You know, investments in the growth of your company that you're kind of like, I don't really want to do that, even though you know that it might be good. So there's a lot more to it than just, you know, making knives and that's enough.
Yeah.
It's the business end of it is crazy, and then you're dealing with never mind. Craig, you're so quiet.
No, you're completely right. I mean, it's, you know, it's not getting up and making every day. There's a million and one other things that you need to do as well, from marketing to accounting to, you know, you need to become very good friends with your postage workers. There's so much you need to be doing, and you know, it's easier if you've got maybe a partner or a business partner who, you know, who can take some of that load off you. But, you know, just be aware that, you know, 100% of your time, you're not going to be making. You'd be lucky if you're making 50% of the time.
I'll tell you a couple of little stories that happened to me this week that I was kind of angry about. I have a deal with an organization, and they have some of my knives, and we're doing some good things, and some friend of mine ordered from them a knife. And I hadn't heard, and usually I can see on our, you know, Shopify whether or not it's been fulfilled or not. And for me, I feel very strongly about the fact that I, you know, for years we used to say we're not Amazon, but I feel as though it's important to meet the expectations of the customer who are used to Amazon, so I try to ship as quickly as possible. Sometimes, like, within the hour of its being ordered. So this friend of mine orders this thing. I'm looking. 1 week's passed. 10 days have passed. And I was like, I know this person. I'm going to send him a message. I sent him a message. Hey, thanks for all the support. I was wondering, was the item that you ordered shipped? And then they said, no, it hasn't. I haven't gotten an email. I don't know anything. I was going to call you. And I was like, I'll take care of it. I rattled some cages like you wouldn't believe. This is not how I do business. If you're not ready, you got to send them a message telling them when it's going to go, and they're expecting it to be shipped. And it ended up leaving. And then that day, it shipped. Mm-hmm. And what I ended up having to say to one of our, you know, the go-betweens was, I don't think you understand how important my reputation is. I don't want people to wonder when they order something from me where it is. I want them to know either it's shipping or I'm going to send them a message saying when it's going to ship. And then when that's I don't want waiting. I don't want waiting for 10 days. I don't want people wondering. And part of that is important to understand what your business is all about, what you want people to see in your business. Another thing was I had to go to this goddamn Zoom sales meeting that I didn't want to go to, but I was asked to go because apparently muscle was needed and I needed to be there for, like, and I was so irritated with the things that were being said in regards to kind of excuses were being made to me. I got so mad, but obviously you can't. That's the other thing. This isn't like the movies where all of a sudden you start slamming shit around and you throw yourself around. You have to be polite and you have to understand there are other people in the room and you have to talk to them in a way that's professional, and you can't, you know, you have to be, you know, succinct and you have to be sharp but firm. And there are things that you don't want to do that you have to do, and you feel like, why do I have to be here for this? And, you know, then you have meetings afterwards on why I had to be there for that. But there's a lot of bullshit that goes that you want in order for the business to be successful that you have to deal with.
No.
I'll never forget that. Allison and I had such a good laugh about that. She was just like, "You look like you're about to." Yeah, steam was coming out of your ears, and she said, "I'm so glad you were there. You really, you were firm, but you didn't really, like, you know, you weren't rude." I said, "As long as I wasn't rude," and she's like, "You weren't rude. You gotta do that shit. This is not knife making shit. This is fucking from the office shit. You know."
Yeah. Deep breath. There's a title. I'm breath. That's today's title.
I'm breath.
I am breath.
But that said, guys, if you want to have some breath, have some Maritime Knife Supply. Go to maritimeknifesupply.com for all your steel belts, abrasives, handle materials, tongs, tools, forges, heat treating ovens, kilns, and everything else. Not to mention, they are the distributor for the Damasteel Invitational Steel. The Damas Steel for the DCI Invitational. If you know, we were talking about it last week. You get it for, if you want to do part of the build along, you got to go to maritimeknifesupply.com. And then when you buy your 10-pack of abrasive belts, they give you 10% off. So we're going to spend some time with old Lawrence over at Maritime Knife Supply. So should you, maritimeknifesupply.com.
Go get it. Okay, we've got an audio message from Brigham, I assume.
Oh, yeah. Hold what you got. Just vamp for a second. I gotta get it up.
Okay.
I mean, what? Hey,
easy. Sorry. So listen, if you've got questions for us, we really like audio questions. So if you head to Instagram, we are Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. When you go to DM, you can now send audio questions. So send them through to us, and Brigham Kindell, our Gold Star listener, has done exactly that.
You are the man. Here's Brigham Kindell.
Hello, gentlemen. I have recently purchased a Dewar, and I just had a question about where you store it. Do you store it out in your shop or inside? Does it really matter? Is it going to make the liquid nitrogen last longer? What are your guys' thoughts? And thanks for all you do. Bye.
Doers.
Do you have a doer?
I don't.
Frank?
I don't have a doer. No. No.
Me either.
No.
All right. I have a doer, and the more important thing about the doer is you want it to be well insulated. So you got to have. So I don't know how you buy them in certain sizes, and then when you get them filled, they fill it to the size that you that it is. So if it's a 20 liter doer, they're giving you 20 liters of liquid nitrogen, and some of it is
20 liters.
Well,
geez, wow, yeah. Okay,
is that a lot?
Yeah, seems to be. Yeah.
Well, if it's well insulated, like lots of, you know, the insulation's good, and then they give you an insulated top, what'll happen is you know, it'll last longer. Now, if somebody told me I was storing it in my shop and I was not storing it directly on the concrete, I was putting wood underneath it for some reason, I haven't noticed that it made a big difference in regards to how long it goes, but I usually, a 20-liter doer usually lasts me... Probably I get three a year, I think. Probably about three a year. But what I try to do is, more importantly, I don't try to make sure I have it and it, I use it all the time. What was more important to me is that I'm focused on getting as much heat treatment done as possible. So like I get it when I need it. And then when I got it, I make sure that I'm heat treating with it. So like I don't wanna be like, I'm in a situation now where I got a feeling that I don't have much longer in the liquid nitrogen, but it does last like let's say 3 to 4 months. I usually have a pretty good life on it.
Yeah,
I've seen some doers that have kind of like a sweater or a bag around it that help to insulate it and help keep it cooler. I think to try to help keep that nitrogen or preserve that nitrogen, liquid nitrogen, for as long as possible as well. Yeah.
Well, there's never any condensation on the outside. Like I never noticed. The only time I don't ever notice any condensation on the sides or anything like that. So it a good doer, you know, that like is well insulated. It's not old, super old. Like we had a listener who said that a listener sent me a message saying that they had gotten a cheap doer, probably like from Timo or something like that or whatever that is. And they put the liquid nitrogen in it, and it was gone by the next day. And I'm like, yeah, that's a shit.
It's a thermos.
And then and then he ended up sending it back, and they gave him a full refund.
Yeah.
You really want to get a, you know, if you're going to get a doer, you got to get a good one. This is the hard part about cryo. Like, not to mention, I don't know the difference in price between dry ice and liquid nitrogen. The thing about the liquid nitrogen, I think you can hold it a lot longer
For sure.
than the dry ice. So, you know, it's... You gotta. The most important thing is not just it'll be fine in your wherever you are. I don't think it's unsafe. It's not volatile. That's for sure.
Yeah. Quick note
just
for
don't
people.
Tip it over.
Yeah. Quick note. 20 liters is 5 1/4 gallons. Just for.
Really?
Yep.
That's a lot. That's more than I thought it was. All right. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go.
Okay.
Doer talk.
Where are we?
We also have listener feedback.
Let's do some of that then. Yeah.
Okay, guys, if you want to send us listener feedback, feel free. We've gotten, we are also, this is a good one. This was from our friend Dustin Sheffield. Dustin Sheffield has sent us an irate listener feedback. Oh. He's gone to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram where he sent us irate listener feedback. I can't believe y'all made fun of my job drying rocks.
I remember a couple
weeks ago, this guy was talking about drying rocks, and Craig wanted. I think you were a little bit fresh with him in regards
I just didn't understand what kind of a job is drying rocks.
I'm so mad.
To dry rocks? I don't know.
Hey, let me finish. He says, I'm so mad I'll never listen to Knife Talk again until Monday. Until Monday. I'll have you know, being a certified Department of Transportation aggregate technician is a lot more than just drying rocks. I sort them. I size them. I check to see if they're elongated. Sometimes I literally have to pound sand. If KTP hasn't made fun of you, can you even consider yourself a fan?
Jesus. Mm. Was he a certified technician?
Certified Department of Transportation aggregate technician.
Jeez.
You motherfuckers driving, drying rocks up in this piece. Certified. I love Dustin Sheff. That's a funny thing to say.
I'm still not wise as to why he's drying rocks, but hey.
Department of Transportation aggregate technician. Maybe he works on the road.
Yeah,
CTAT. I don't know.
CTAT. He's got a badge. Member of CTAT.
Dustin, I apologize on behalf of Craig Lockwood for making fun of you as a rock driver.
I'm not making fun. I'm just curious.
And then I think we got another problem. So J-Mod Knives is written up. He says, we were talking about his shop is not, he feels like his shop smells bad and he doesn't have good ventilation. So I said, I'm surprised.
Not his skateboarder friend.
Tell him what he said.
Yeah.
He's a skateboarder. And I said, well, I'm surprised that anything bothers your nose because skateboarders smell terrible. Y'all were cracking me up last week. Jeff is right. Skaters are some of the worst smelling humans. I always felt bad whoever had to sit next to me on an airplane. But unfortunately, I think the smell is spray foam off. Oh, so he says he thinks what the problem is. Unfortunately, I think the smell is my spray foam off gas.
Mm.
So he's got like sprayable insulation. I think it's what is off gassing?
It's when an odor leaves.
As it's drying.
Yeah. Like a solvent would have a lot of off-gassing, you know. It's just,
right.
Yeah.
All right, well, Dale Watterson says, hey, KTP team, listening to Jeff battle with a snake in his shop had me in stitches, and it reminded me of times when I've had to deal with rats, birds, and the occasional feral cat living at my workplace.
Oh, geez.
I reckon there should be a bit here in the show, what's living in your shop? I'm sure the listeners have plenty of entertaining stories to share. Keep up the great work. Still bricked up in Berwick. So, guys, send in what other weird animals are living in your shop.
Well,
and we'll,
if I look out my window here, I've got like a little brewery room downstairs, like in the barn here. And there's a huge hole next to it. Because it's a dirt floor that's just appeared over the last maybe month. And occasionally I just put one of those little rat, you know, those little little packets of like rat poison. I just put one of them next to it. And it's gone within like an hour or so. So there's something there, but it's not dying. It keeps taking. I'm feeding it basically. It's probably huge.
You're making it stronger.
It's probably huge by now. Yeah, I don't know what it is. Yeah, I think it's like a pine marten or something like that. I think it is. But every time I need to step past it, scares the life out of me.
We have where my old shop was at a little shed, and every year something new is living under the shed. It's like Watership Down. You know, it's like. There's sometimes there's a skunk, sometimes there's a groundhog, sometimes there's a rabbit, sometimes there's squirrels. We've had everything living under, and then our dog Bessie, who is a terror. She's not a terror. She's a terrorist. She is the sweetest looking dog, but she is a cold blooded murderer. And every time she always has her eye on the shed because she knows something new is going to come out. And whatever new comes out, she is all over it. And she's gotten rabbits. She's gotten skunks. She's gotten the biggest one. This giant groundhog came out, and it was like a sumo wrestling match. And she grabbed it and it's the same size as her. She flipped it over, and it was like this crazy war. It wasn't even like a normal animal fight. It was like she was like suplexed this fucking groundhog. It was like WWE wrestling. So we hate what's on what every year it's something new, and I hate all the stuff that lives in. But this snake is I'm used to Jeff Jr.
I couldn't be comfortable knowing it was there. No.
You know what? It was fun. The video was really funny. The worst part about it was the comments that I got and the DMs I got from all these snake know-it-alls who were just. And then you missed the part in the beginning, Craig. You know how people say, "Oh, I've been a welder for 25 years, and I don't know what you're doing in there." And you know, they give you, you know, that when you do something and then they give you their resume, why you should listen to them. I had one of those snake guys, a friend of mine who was just like, oh, I know what that is because I've been a, you know, snake remover for, you know, blah, 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 blah. I was like, don't give me your resume, bro.
Okay. Where are who have we to?
We got one more good one. We got one more good
okay.
one.
Have we told everybody about Evenheat yet?
Yes, we have. Today. Evenheat, Indasa, Texas Ferrier, Maritime, and we haven't talked about Broadback, Craig.
Oh, well. Well, listen, if you're in the market for a new grinder, you know where you need to go? BroadbeckIronworks.com. They make great grinders, and everything works with everything else. So they've got all these attachable arms, you know, small arm attachments, and, you know, surface grinders, all these different attachments. They fit. They use a standard size, I was going to say pipe, but it's not a pipe. It's a standard size, what's the word, Jeff?
Doohickey.
They use a standard size doohickey. So yeah, your attachments will fit. Even if you've got a different grinder, their attachments will probably fit that grinder as well, you know. But get on it. Get on it. Yeah, if you're looking for a new one, they're the ones to go for. They've always got deals as well, particularly around sort of holiday times. But at the moment, if you use Knife Talk 10, I believe you get 10% off your order with them. But take a look at their website, broadbackironworks.com.
Sorry, I was looking at, there are more angry listener feedback.
Angry, okay, okay.
Yeah, there's one directed to you coming up.
Go on, then. Go on.
I'm so happy, but I'm gonna give you the appetizer of that one. I don't know if I did this one last week, but Naren McDonald says, "Hey guys, listening to the latest episode in the conversations on gatekeeping. I think a good example is when I was asked about a forging press and some old-timer chimed in with, you're not a blacksmith if you don't build your own press. And he was just like, yeah, well, go fuck yourself. keep up the good work and keep discussing topics and questions that may or may not have easy answers. I think we talked about
that last week. I think we had that one last week, yeah.
But you know what? I'll tell you what's interesting, and I was talking to somebody about this, is there's one thing that people do that is you have to be aware of, and that's moving goalposts. Moving goalposts are when you're trying to find some happiness and success, and then someone says, yeah, but you haven't, you know, all of a sudden you show this degree of competency or a milestone in your own success, and then somebody kind of, you know, really not nice, they change the goalposts.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And then I find that once you can kind of identify that, you realize that some people just don't have your best interests at heart, as opposed to being like, hey man, yeah, you made it, you know, you sold these knives, that's really great, instead of saying, well, you didn't sell that many knives.
Yeah.
Or you make knives but you're not a bladesmith. That whole thing of goalposts, changing goalposts, is pretty insidious, I think.
Oh, I know what you mean. Yeah.
You know what I mean, Mareko?
Yeah, for sure.
Because people do that shit. In the knife-making game, they do that shit all the time.
Yeah.
And I think particularly, you know, if you've accomplished something, no matter what level you're at, it's, you know, you want to be sort of celebrated for it. You'd want somebody saying, oh, well, you're not at the next level yet, you know? And it's just like, whoa, easy, you know?
Well, you know, that's what they do. I mean, I hate to bring it back to basketball, but that's what they're doing to the New York Knicks, where they had no one thought the Knicks could get to the round that they're in now. And then once they got there, it was just incredible. And they said, yeah, but they didn't beat this next team. And it's just like, well, when are you going to give them any kind of, I mean, when is somebody satisfied? Yeah. Or not necessarily satisfied, but what's the point of changing the goalposts after someone's meet an expectation? Yeah. I hate that shit. I think that you got to recognize that when somebody does that to you, that they're not for you. They are against you.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Mad props to Naren, by the way. Did you see his stories where he was deadlifting like 450 pounds or 405?
Oh, when's he going to do 500? You know?
Blasting that shit out. It was impressive. Impressive, Naren.
Yeah, I see you didn't do 500 yet, yeah, Naren.
Exactly.
Naren's a big old boy. Yeah, he'll give you a lift. Now we have, Craig, you're in big trouble.
Okay.
This is from Simple Little Knives. Dear Craig, how dare you? Architects, I think you said that architects, all they do is draw. I think
quite possibly, I think yeah, I might have.
Yeah, you said, oh, well, you're an architect. All you do is draw buildings. I think an architect called in. He didn't like how you minimized his... profession and his career. Oh. So, dear Craig, how dare you? Architects don't merely do technical drawings. That's draftsmen, you bellend.
Fair point. Okay.
I like that. You, and he did do a winky face. So mad. We design buildings, public spaces, artistic follies, and a bunch more. The clarifying point here is exactly what Jeff said. It's not about communicating. It's not just about communicating. It doesn't matter how simple. You have to be concise and well thought out in the decisions you've made. I'm starting to see why the Welsh rugby team is ranked 12th in the world.
Oh. Yeah. Only 12th. Wow. Okay.
Shots fired.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
That's Yeah, Craig, I apologize.
You're right. Obviously,
You know what? Let me apologize for you from now on. You don't have to lift a finger. I will apologize for you. You don't have to say a word.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Craig apologizes. Now, beat it. Beat it. You take your pencil and shove
it. Yeah, I bet he chews his pen. You know, he's just like you just say, he's just chewing the end of it. He's got ink all over his shirt. And
oh, God. Oh, what's all these broken pens over here? It must have been an architect.
Yeah. Oh, it's my birthday. I get new pens.
What's that?
A crayon set for Christmas. There you go.
Oh.
I could do red ones. I could do green ones. I could do blue ones.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I love the fact that we're insulting the profession of architects. All they are just like people sharpening pencils. Relax, everybody. That's fine by me. I'm not going to read this one. I think that's enough feedback for now. There was another wacko one, but I'll save it for another day.
Okay. Let's get back to a few questions then, shall we? Hutch Handmade Knives. Hey, guys, just curious if you would be willing to give your it's moved.
Sorry.
If you will give your rundown on how you use the Tormek sharpening system, maybe you already have on the pod. As a Tormek ambassador and someone who proudly supports three of them babies, how do you set them up, Jeffrey? I got the system to speed up my sharpening process and would love to hear the off-book uses for the system. Thanks for your show.
Hutch is the man. He will be a Blade Show. And I actually, so he didn't have to wait. I actually used the Knife Talk podcast telephone line and I called.
Oh, cool.
So I gave him a little bit of here's the
service.
Well, I mean, I had a moment and I thought, you know, I am the
ambassador.
The ambassador. As soon as all of a sudden I got to polish up my little metal and be like, all right,
you're spoiling
off
us.
To work.
You're spoiling us, Mr. Ambassador.
I grab my thermos. Is it Hillary? I'm off to work. Ambassador's job is never done. So what I said to him, and the whole thing about the Tormek is, the Tormek is a really great system, but like all machines, it's not like you know what to do exactly when it comes out of the box. There's practice to be had. Same thing with a grinder. Same thing with heat treat ovens. Same thing with all machines. Tormek has done is they've created a way to make a wheel with a well, and the well moves up and down to keep sure that the wheel is wet, and then it moves in a slow way, and you can decide which direction you want to go, and you can figure out which way you want to go. They have jigs to kind of make it a little bit easier for you. They have, you know, they have little measuring devices to figure out what your angle is. They can help you figure out what your angle is. They can help you figure out what angle is best. So there's a lot of things to learn. It's not just out of the box and all of a sudden your knives are sharp. It took me a long time to get comfortable with it, and I'll tell you what I did to get comfortable. The first thing is you can go to the Tormek YouTube channel, and they have awesome videos on how to use the Tormek differently. They're also, their customer service is outstanding. The guys there are amazing. And Hutch, you got to go visit the Tormek guys when you are at Blade Show. They'll be at Blade Show, and they're really terrific. What I started to do is I started to find that the jigs didn't really work well for me. And I started to freehand them. And what I was telling him is, part of it is also your height. Like, if you're used to stone sharpening, your stones are on your table or in your wherever you're sharpening at a specific height. You have to think about where the top of your Tormek is, in terms of you being comfortable, the first time I ever saw people using Tormek, Tomer Botner, Florentine Kitchen Knives, they have three Tormeks, and they actually stand on boxes, so they're up over the knives. Mm-hmm. So the top of the stone is almost level. If it were to be like a stone on a table, it would be the same height. So you're trying to figure out the height that you're going to be most comfortable with. Now, what I do is I have it on a little bit on the lower side, and then I also like the wheel going away from me. I don't like the wheel coming towards me because I'm afraid if I move it a certain way, it's just going to turn the knife and flip it or damage it or something.
Sure.
The other thing is I was really focused on just practicing on non-expensive, important knives. And then what I told him was because I know I have three, and the reason why I have three is I have three different wheels, so I can go from one to the next to the next. If you're planning on just getting comfortable with it, the best way to go is get the Tormek, have it on the stone on the coarsest wet grind. It's usually there's a coarse and a smooth. And then just practice getting the burr. Once you practice getting the burr, you can just, you know, finish it off with your stones. You know, once you get the burr, you should be able to finish it off with the stones a little bit quicker. And that will get you more comfortable with using the Tormek over time, to the point where you say, yeah, you know what, I do want to get another Tormek, and then I want to be able to have, you know, three Tormeks or, you know, down the line. Mm. There are little learning curves that you can do to make it as successful as possible, but the most important thing is to understand that they give you a lot of information when you get the they have books and books and books that they send along with the Tormek on figuring out your angle. How do you true the wheel? If the wheel's all fucked up, how do you use the truing system? And it's a great system, and I love it, but like everything else, it takes practice.
Yeah.
Interesting. Do the Tormek machines, are they just one-wheel machines? For some reason, I thought they were two-wheel.
No, one wheel, yeah, but you have a dress-in stone, so you're going to get two grits out of one stone.
Right.
Unless you go for Japanese.
They have a leather, you usually be one stone with the well on the stone, and then it'll have a leather strop on the other side.
Mm, I got you.
But they can't do two wheels at the same time.
Another question for you.
Shoot.
Can you cut or sharpen serrations with the Tormek?
No, because I've actually talked to them about that. They would at some point they could probably make a wheel, but the hardest part is every serrations are all different.
Yeah, sure.
Like everybody's scallops are different, so I would say no.
Okay.
You can't sharpen a serrated knife with that.
All right.
But I would say that is, as much as we often talk about Dremels and how bad Dremels are, you can get the little stones, but they're sort of rounded tips to them. So I've used them to do serrations because it can do any sort of size, if you know what I mean, because that rounded tip is sort of gets bigger and it's like angled, so it gets bigger. So if you clamp that into something and have some sort of way of keeping your blade, you know, at the same angle each time, I have done that in the past, and that sort of works.
I wonder if you could do that with like a drill press.
I'm sure you could. Yeah, if you'd made some sort of jig to hold your blade in the right place. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could actually. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah. But like Jeff said, every serration is slightly different. So the good thing about those little stones that go in a Dremel is the fact that it can do any sort of size.
Nice.
I would say that the most important thing, one of the big takeaways from Tormek is they're not just the machine maker. There are people who copy the Tormek. There are like these like fake knockoff Tormeks. But one of the things about Tormek is they also give a ton of information. Mm. Their YouTube page is really awesome. Yeah. They used to do Instagram lives, and they became so popular because people were really, they got really into, you know, hanging out with Sebastian and all those guys. So there really are almost like a content creation company on how to use their equipment.
Nice.
So, but everything's hard. Everything takes practice. That's the one thing. It's like, even with the Broadbeck, once you get the Broadbeck, it's not going to teach you how to make a knife.
Yeah. Right.
You know, it's just a tool to, there are different ways in which to use it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Ryan Schilling, this is for you, Mareko. Hey, Knife Talk, quick question. What is the trick to hand forge a Damascus knife and not destroy the pattern?
Interesting. I think if you're trying to preserve the pattern and prevent as much distortion as possible, forging to profile is the move. I've found that if you forge too close to kind of like the quote-unquote finish or heat treating dimension, so forging in a taper out to the tip and down to the edge, and like bevels down to the edge and stuff like that, the thinner the cross-section of the steel gets, whether it's just kind of straight laminated stuff or mosaics, the thinner that cross-section gets, the more potential there is for distortion. So if you're trying to prevent distortion, then just kind of forging in the profile will help to preserve the actual pattern that's happening on the steel as much as possible. So that would be my advice, is just to forge to profile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
All right. This next one's from Van Gask. Question for the podcast. I've got a couple of pieces of feather Damascus steel that I thought came from a reputable source, but now I'm not so sure. Should I still use it for blades? And if not, what are some suggestions for other uses for it? So you get some steel and you don't feel confident in it. What are different applications for that steel, do you think? I think just decorative accents, really, like guards.
Bottle openers.
Yeah, bottle opener is actually a good move. Pummel caps, like some decorative butt caps on the bottom of the handles. Especially if you don't feel super confident in the kind of like the quality of the steel. Accents, or turn it into earrings, bottle openers, all kinds of other stuff.
Everybody's making the big thing now is ashtrays for some reason.
Ashtrays.
We're now in 2025, and people are making fucking ashtrays.
Ashtrays.
Right.
I can see that.
I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, I thought people were vaping now. Now we're still with the ashtrays?
Well, it's for people like Will Stelter smoking them cigars.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. All right, we gotta head back. There's a couple. There's one we skipped over. I wanted to do. There's a couple. Actually, let's do this one from Randy Reichart. Randy Reichart said, "I find that I have a really hard time deciding to do custom orders because I just need a break. And other times, I want to work on my own projects." Declining to do custom orders, my mistake. Mm. I have a hard time declining to do custom orders. Sometimes I just need a break, and other times I want to work on my own projects. I just don't know what the best way of telling people this is. Any suggestions? Thanks. So he feels bad telling someone he doesn't want to do a custom order because he's, you know, burnt out by him.
Mm.
Yeah.
I would just tell somebody that you got a couple projects in front of you. And once you get through those, then you can start working on theirs.
Fucking good, dude.
That's it.
Just don't tell them no. The dumbest thing you can do is say, my books are closed. And I'm sorry to all our listeners who have books are closed. But
that's me, too.
Well, what you're telling people is don't ask.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's books are closed generally means, you know, it's like it turns people away, especially if you're in the situation where you want more business. You know, what Mareko said is perfect. Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just I think don't people throw just them need away. Communication, really. And just like the previous one of our previous questions, I think people just need to not feel like they've just been forgotten about. They don't want to feel it. Doesn't feel good. So just communicating to them something very simple like that is very understandable. And they honestly don't know what your fucking workflow looks like. You could be working on other customs. You could be doing your own stuff. They don't know. So just by telling them, yeah, I got a few projects in front of me, and then once those are done, then I can get working on yours.
What do you think, Craig?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think don't feel pressure into doing something that you don't want to be doing. But I think you're in a sort of very sort of privileged position to be able to say that you don't want that work. But yeah, keep that door open a bit maybe and say, look, we said, you know, at the moment, you don't have the capacity to take on that work. But you know, who's to say you don't in a few weeks? Yeah,
I would do whatever it takes to. I'll be honest with you guys. I worry about what's going to happen down the line, because I think, you know, we talk about security and we talk about custom orders, and some of us are looking down the line of, you know, a couple months as opposed to a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And part of me is just like, if you want to keep the ball rolling down the line, I think that you know, sometimes, you know, the person you say no to this guy and maybe he goes away, you know, and I think it's really like important, especially if you're in business, to try to keep yourself on the top of people's minds and, you know, put yourself in a position, especially if you're in business, to make sure that you're staying in business.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I, when somebody wants something, like we're dealing with a couple of things that I don't necessarily want to do, but I know that in the long term, it would be good for our company.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say no. I don't think I've said no to. Probably something stupid.
Sure. Is that referred to as, that's customer retention, right? And it's just a little bit of communication will go a long way, honestly.
I just know that when I look at the data of our company, we get a giant amount of return business. And I talk to other knife makers who say the same thing. Like, I'm amazed at how much return business I have. And you have an opportunity to, you know, it's harder to find a customer than to keep a customer. That's what somebody says. And
yeah.
That's one of the things that you want to make sure, especially when it comes to people thinking about a special gift for a wedding or something more expensive than they normally would get, and they know that they can count on you, you want to be at the top of their list.
Right.
And that's something that I feel very strongly about. And everybody's direction is different. Like, I'm not saying that what I say goes. For me, I would want to make sure that I'm on the top of someone's mind when they want a knife from someone.
Yeah. Yeah, makes sense. Should we call it a day?
Yeah. Why don't we fool around for a minute or two?
On a first date?
Hey, yo.
Okay, thank you all for listening. I mean, we do this every week for you. So every Monday morning, you will find a new show available on whatever podcast service you're listening to. Do us a favor and write us a review or, you know, a 5-star, something like that. Yeah, it'd be really handy. The more people who listen to the show, I think the better the show is, because this show really does rely on, you know, people's questions and, you know, people interacting with the show. So, yeah, any sort of review would be really handy. So thank you all. And with that, bye-bye for now.
And we got to thank our friend Carly for coming by last week.
Yes. It was a good show, wasn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
Carly from Damasteel was unbelievable.
Yeah. She was really worried about getting technical questions, but it was absolutely fine. It was all good.
You know what the funny part was? She said that those were technical questions. I think we got her the technical questions anyway. But guys, if you want to know more about Damasteel, go to damasteel.ab. And then you can follow us along with the Damasteel Build Along and join us for the DCI. And by all means, do the Build Along, get your Damasteel, the best pattern welded stainless Damascus you're going to get at damasteel.ab. And then you can put us in promo code KnifeTalk10, right? Is that right?
Yeah, just KnifeTalk and you get 10% off.
KnifeTalk, you get 10% off. And for the Damasteel Build Along, it's all that information's on the website. Yeah. So many thanks to our friends at Damasteel and Carly.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah.
What have you all been watching?
What have I been watching? Oh, you wouldn't know it. It's very British. It was this thing called, you're going to laugh at me a bit. It was called The Stolen Girl, but a kid being stolen. You know, one of these sort of true.
Wait, what was the name?
The Stolen Girl, it's called, on Disney. It was really good. It was really good. A proper sort of gritty sort of drama. But yeah, we watched that. My wife's been away, so she came back. I think it was yesterday. So yeah, we binge watched like 3 or 4 episodes last night of it. It was really good.
Nice.
Anything, Mareko?
Not really. Nah. Oh, actually, I did just start watching What We Do in the Shadows, which is about like these. It's like The Office, but it's vampires. And it is very, very funny. I can't even remember the guys. The guy that played, holy shit, I can't even think of words right now. I'm sorry. Anyways, it's very funny, and I've been enjoying watching that. It's very low investment, and it's a lot of British humor, and I like it a lot.
I just can't get into sort of funny and lighthearted stuff. I don't have the attention span for it, I think. Unless it's a really sort of deep and dark thing, I don't know. I struggle to get into stuff.
It's funny that you say that because Hillary and I have been watching all the ghoul shows, like Last of Us and everything like that.
Yeah.
And she stopped. We stopped after we watched the first two episodes. Mm-hmm. And Hillary was just like, I can't anymore. My own work is like ghoul time anyway, so I don't need any of this. So we were watching on Apple TV, we were watching The Studio, the Seth Rogen
show. Oh, right,
show.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Fucking great.
Really?
It's really, really funny. It's really good. It's really, really good. It's about these very toxic people in a Hollywood studio. It's great. It's really funny. And they have all sorts of famous people coming through, and it's really, really great. And they're just like, you know, it's kind of like Larry David. It's kind of like Curb Your Enthusiasm, but it's hilarious. It's really, really good. Surprising.
I always forget to look on Apple TV for stuff because it's very sort of infrequently that they put new stuff on, isn't it? So, but generally what they do put on is really good, but I just always forget to look, to be honest.
You'd like The Studio. It's funny. It's short and it doesn't take a lot of time, and it's very, very good. So we've been enjoying that. But Hillary and Malila are gone for a couple of days, so I think I'm going to... And then the Knicks are not playing tonight, so I think I'm going to watch. I guess I'm going to depress myself and watch The Last of Us because she doesn't want to watch anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's call it a day. And we should speak to you all again next week. Bye for now.
Don't you deserve a Medicare plan you can count on? Well, you can count on a Medicare Advantage plan from United Healthcare. Enjoy reliable coverage and low out-of-pocket costs with a Medicare Advantage plan from United Healthcare. And if you have a chronic condition like diabetes, chronic heart failure, or a cardiovascular disorder, you may qualify for a United Healthcare Complete Care plan with plans that fit your life today and as your needs change tomorrow. Find out more about United Healthcare plans at uhc.com/Medicare.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.